Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Are you frustrated by your typical hunting and fishing magazines? Are you tired of reading content meant for guys up north or in the Midwest? Don't get left behind following the guidance of guys who don't hunt and fish in your home state. Pick up a Great Days Outdoors magazine subscription and become a better Southern outdoorsman. Great Days Outdoors magazine can be found at your local Books A Million, Tractor Supply Company, Rural King, or you can save and buy online at greatdaysoutdoors.com. Alrighty, guys, welcome back to another week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. This time leading the charge, we got Andre Davis up from around the Birmingham area. Andre, how you doing today, sir?
I'm great and I'm grateful. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how I'm doing. Great and grateful. And my boss listens to this show, so I can't tell him. I used to have a whole coworker, you'd ask him how he was doing. He would say, I'm blessed but highly stressed.
Yeah. Yeah, that applies as well.
That's it. Staying busy. But no, it's been, man, it's hard to be in a bad mood. It's hard to be too stressed out this time of the year. Like, I'm looking out in my backyard and like the jasmine's playing out, but the wisteria is coming on strong. And then I got some, I got some rhododendron and some azaleas and stuff like that in my backyard. I mean, all the flowers, like the violets are doing good, like beautiful time of the year. The dogwoods are coming on. It's impossible to be in a bad mood this time of the year.
That's it. You know, and I live on the mountain here in Birmingham, and so I'm looking out, we got a sunset going on out here that's to die for. And yesterday, you took the wife, loaded up in the car and drove around, and we were looking at cherry blossoms and finding where they were all around town. And so kind of fun just to hop in the car and see what's what, even in the city, you know, this time of year can't be beat.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And there's parts of Birmingham that's real, real pretty. And y'all got Oak Mountain right there in the middle of it. And, I got a cherry tree in my front yard, and, yeah, that's a pretty tree. I got it on my neighbor's property. I got a Bradford pear, but I try not to look at it. I'll begrudgingly admit that it is pretty for a few days, and it's about all the good I can say about it. But
it's pretty, but it doesn't smell any good.
No, they don't smell any good, and the blossoms blow all over my car, and they're invasive and all that jazz. I'm starting to see them, not starting to see them. You see them every year pop up in the woods more and more, but anyway, what's been going on in the fishing world, man? I know everybody that we've been talking to here lately has just been chomping at the bit, excited about all the changes, water's warming up. What's it looking like for you?
Yeah, it's been really good up here. Honestly, everything's kind of turning on all at once. The last couple of weeks, we got a cold snap coming in a little bit today. Definitely overnight tonight and overnight tomorrow, we're going to see as low as 30 right on the nose. So that'll change and kind of shake it up for about a day or two, but I think by this weekend, when the front comes in, we get a little bit of rain, it's going to pick right back where we've been this last week. And it's been a ton of fun. We've had, Mayfly Project. We take foster and adoptive kids and we go and we teach them how to fly fish, conservation, rigging, fish handling, you know, how to read the water, all that fun stuff. They just had a blast this last weekend. We took them out and did some creek fishing. That was the first time for most all of them to get into the water like that. And go and hunt some fish, caught some panfish. Same thing with the skills and gills that I do. We take out kiddos, typically 14 and under, where a lot of times on guided trips, stuff like that, you don't see them out nearly as much, even in like at Orvis and stuff when we're doing the 101 and 102 classes where we're teaching. A lot of times the younger kids don't get as immediately involved as they can. I just didn't see it as often. So that's kind of what I do in skills and gills, is give them an opportunity to come out and join us and learn and jump in. And panfish right now, since the beginning of March, have really turned on in a big way. The last week in particular has been just incredible. And as we get closer to this full moon that we're about to have on, I believe it's the 25th or 26th, but this one here that we're about to get in March, whatever day it is that it's on. And from there, once they really start to spawn, you're going to start to see those pop marks all over the shallows and every one of your neighborhood ponds. And you're really going to start to see them in the creeks. They're already spawning in the ponds. I'll tell you, if you've got, and we'll talk more about this, but a little floating bug, your preference. I don't mind if it's a stimmy, if it's a little simple foam bug, whatever it is. But you throw that thing within 5 feet of a bank right now, and you're going to pull in panfish. And so it's a great time to teach young folks, great time to teach, you know, newcomers to fly fishing. You know, give them a 7 foot leader, strip out, maybe 10 foot of fly line, and let them just pick it up and throw it down. Pick it up and throw it, and they're just going to catch fish all day. So fishing has been completely outrageous in that world. Bass is still a little bit slow. I know you're talking to some other folks today on the show who can unpack that a lot more. It's not so much that it's slow in the bad sense. You're going to fish slow is what I should say. So low and slow has been kind of my experience in the Cahaba and the Coosa in the bigger water. But man, if you want to just go out and guys are catching, if you're not looking on Facebook and seeing that stuff, and the proof's in the pudding, the fish biting isn't necessarily slow, but the fish style is how you're going to do your retrieves, all that. But man, if you want some really fast and furious action, go to some still water, go to some small creeks, look at those little pop marks, even if you don't see them, throw it the undercut bank, throw it the shallow shore of the pond, and just line them up.
For sure. Yeah, I've been noticing. It seems like where I'm at, there's always some ponds that warm up earlier than others, and the ponds, the little shallow warm ponds warm up and fish start spawning before they do out in the creeks. But man, it's been awesome. We've been catching bluegill. We've been catching red ear. We've been catching warmouth. We've been catching red spotted sunfish. Me and a buddy are doing the FFI Gulf Coast sunfish or suncatch slam. So we're kind of driving around trying to play Pokemon, you know, grown men playing Pokemon out there on the water, trying to catch them all. And it's been a great time. And it's cool what you say, talking about taking kids fishing. Mine's still several years out. We'd take her fishing with us, but she's nowhere near old enough to do any fishing. But my buddy, his little girl is getting old enough that she can fish. And he actually just borrowed my Tenkara rod the other day. We met up and we fished for a little bit, and he took that home to put his kid on hopefully her first couple of fly fish. So are you taking with like the Mayfly Project and Skills and Gills? Is that something where you're taking them and just doing conventional fishing, or are you sitting there teaching kids that small how to fly fish?
We're doing fly fishing. Yeah, we sure are. Yeah, that's both of them are wrapped fully around fly fishing. So, you know, it's Mayfly. There's a lot to unpack there, but it's a nonprofit organization. They actually provide Cortland 5-weights for each one of the kids. And they're nice, man. They really are. It's a nice rig, a really great setup. A lot of Mayfly, a lot of the territories are in trout water. So I kind of end up tying a lot of leaders and stuff for them because I got 10 million of them lying around here anyway. My wife is happy to see them go to good use. But I have a lot of heavier warm water leaders. And, you know, we teach them how to tie the bugs. We teach them all about, you know, how to do the casting, how to rig it themselves. So they own the process from top to bottom. I make them do everything. We take it out of the fly rod bag, and I'll take the spool off. I'll take the spool apart. I do everything but strip the line off and make them put the whole thing together top to bottom. So, man, they really get a great feeling of ownership, you know, of the process. They know that everything about what happened from when they pulled into, you know, the fishing spot to when they got that fish in hand, they did it. It was all them, you know. And that's just a really cool way to do that. It happens over 5 different meetings. You know, we try to make sure we start in January or February, and then they learn the first couple of cold meetings. It's one a month. And then they fish the last 3. And so, yeah, man, that's just a really cool deal. Skills and Gills, same thing. You know, it's 9-foot 5-weights. I tend to, with Skills and Gills, is kind of my deal. So I like a shorter rod, preference issue. A lot to talk about there, but it's not that kind of show. But, you know, about different kind of rod styles and everything and what they're best at, so forth. But a lot of times when I'm walking them around these little ponds, it's just really easy to help them control it and go out there and just do nothing but pop gills. So that's just a ton of fun, but it's all fly fishing, all flies. And at least on Mayfly side, it's all flies that they have tied themselves. A lot of the folks that I meet for Skills and Gills, how they find me is through either Orvis, at least it was. I don't get to do the classes with Orvis anymore right now. They just don't have any in rotation right now. So when they light back up, I very much look forward to doing it again. But we also do a fly tying night with a group we've started here in Birmingham called the Okauba. Which is Indian, it's the original Indian word or phrase, I suppose, but for the Cahaba River. It's the name that they use for the Cahaba River. And so if you know the Cahaba Brewing Company, they have an IPA named after it, also the Okauba IPA. And I always have extra tying stations set up for the kids to come out, or young adults, or just new adults to fly tying. All are welcome. But we teach them how to tie their own flies there, do like a real simple foam, kind of a down, a simpler version of like a lano bug. Is what I usually have them tie, just a little bit of a stick of foam on a hook with some rubber legs hanging out. And it just tears them up, man. It just tears those panfish up. It's super, super fun.
That sounds awesome. And that's cool. Talking about Cortland supplying the stuff. We just had Richard Nicoletti with Cortland on not too long ago. And that's really cool to know that they support that. You talked about taking kids and teaching them to fly fish, what's your best tips if somebody's trying to teach their kid or trying to teach other kids, other than don't stand behind them and make sure you wear your sunglasses?
Yeah, that's on the list for sure. But honestly, I think one of the bigger things is, as you start to put the rod together, like as you take it out of the car, don't necessarily put it together first. Do everything that you're gonna do as you start to set up and get them towards the water, and all, do it in front of them, because every kid will surprise you. Every time we do this, we have some kids who they like the process and they want to know about the leader and they want to know how you strung it and what your loop to loop connection was and why. And how come, Mr. Andre's leader has a big old bright red section to it and none of the other ones do? And they want to tie their own, and now they want to put the leader together. And some really get caught up in that. And as adults, as we're all fly fishers, we kind of tend to do the same, right? You kind of got different folks interested in different parts of the process. Some are gear people in fly fishing. Most of us, fishing really at all, most of us are gear people, right? Some of us love the knots and the intricacies and the different weights of beads, on your subsurface flies and, all of this kind of thing, right? And then some of us, all you want to do is just get the fish to hand, and you just want that photo with it or whatever it may be and everything in between. So what I'm saying is let them watch every step of the process and let them stop you at the part that catches their attention. And just kind of sit in that moment with them for a while. Once they figure out that part and they fall in love with the step of all of the processes that they love the most, they'll naturally go towards the water. And the thing I'll tell you is, once you get them to the water, set it up to be simple. Give them some easy victories. This time of year is absolutely perfect for that. Grab anything you got that's top water. It's simple enough to cast and small enough to catch some of the smallest fish. And like I said, put them on a 7-foot leader, rip out another 5 to 10 feet of fly line. You don't need much, just enough they can throw it. And it's, you and I both like to do some Takara. It's not dissimilar from that. That's essentially what you're setting them up for. All right, teach them how to pinch the fly line up against the cork so they have some very, very minimal, but still some line control happening, and let them just walk the bank and flick that fly in and out. Watch those little bluegill come up and the shell cracker and all the rest of it come up and just bubble on that fly. It's like throwing dog food to catfish, pop, 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 pop. And man, their little eyes will light up and they'll just fall in love with it. But let them fall in love with it on their terms, I guess is kind of the moral of that. Yeah, it really is. That's the best thing I can say is give space to allow them to fall in love with it on their terms. If it's your kiddos, nieces, nephews, somebody that you know real well, you might have some insight into that. If it's something like with me, I don't always know, the kiddos, the day I fish with them is my first introduction to them, their parents, et cetera. So you just got to step back and let them do it a little bit and just guide them and watch when their eyes light up and step in then and just help them invest in that part of it. Right. That would be my biggest advice.
I like it. The only thing I would add to that is kind of piggybacking off what you were saying, like talking about let them fall in love with the process and don't discount the joy that, the method and the little things bring to them would be just go with them, is what I've learned interacting with kids over the years. Like you may have a kid who you have it in your mind, like, okay, where to go catch bluegill today. And then they see shiners up in the grass, or they see frogs at the bank, and they're like, well, I want to go catch a frog. And yeah, I've seen adults be like, no, we're bluegill fishing. And me, I'm like, all right, I'll give you $5 if you can catch that frog.
That's it. That's exactly right. Yeah, it really is. That's it. That's what, that's where giving them that space, but you're right to follow up on that is follow them, follow their lead. If you're really doing it for them to go out instead of doing it for the sake of fly fishing, then do it for them and let them go and do that. I get kids all the time out of our whole group with Mayfly, if we got, let's for round numbers, we're going to call it 10 kids, then usually somewhere in that area, two of them are going to be, one of them's just running around in the field chasing butterflies and the other one is throwing mud clots, the other kids, and the rest of them are fishing, and that's perfectly okay. At different points in my life, including my adulthood, I've been every one of those versions of that kid. couldn't tell you how many times, even just in fishing, I don't even end up putting the rod together. I'll get to the water and just sit there and watch it, or go chase after a blue heron and watch him fish, or whatever it is. And I think that's a good word that you said there is go with them wherever their attention is grabbed, wherever they're drawn. It's kind of a sense of inspiration, right? Motivation, I say, pushes, inspiration pulls. It's like a moth to flame. Wherever they're drawn, go with them. I think that's a real good word, Nick.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Every now and then I do, as a writer, I do come up with one or two words. Usually every week I come up with a couple good words. So tricky.
Yeah, you do.
If I could just come up with 1,500 good words a week, I'd really have something going here. So Well, I
Yeah, I
do.
read all
I
of your
can't.
articles. I'll second that.
Well, I appreciate it. I hate that you got to suffer through that, but I do appreciate it. I got to ask before we move on, or as we move on, I guess. You mentioned earlier that you'd done the Red Eye Bass Slam, and you'd knocked it out pretty early in the year. What can you tell me? Do you ever mess with any of them over there on the Georgia side of things? I've been eyeballing that. I'd like to do the Grand Slam this year. You ever mess with them, or you just do the Mobile Basin Slam?
No, yeah, both. So, yeah, so Bartram's in South Carolina and Altamaha. So, yeah, I've done both. I tell you that the Georgia one is tough for me. That's where I've so far gotten skunked. So I've not been able to do all seven. I keep trying. Mobile Basin, I can really knock out. I can do that pretty well. I like even taking people out and kind of showing them, some of the ropes of what to look for, where to fish, that kind of thing, so they can try to do it, especially when people want to kind of take it to the next level and try to do it in a day. I get reached out to and asked about that from time to time, and I'll take folks out. But yeah, once you get out of the state, getting to the Chattahoochee and all that, that's a little bit different ball game. I am sorry for the dad joke, but a fish out of water in that. So every time I do that part of it, I just if I have the time, I make a run at it, and we hope for the best. That's all I can tell you about it. That's as far as I've got the other states been.
That's it.
Alabama,
That's
I
it.
can tell you a whole lot about that. The other ones, I guess and I hope, and I use what I know about Alabama and I apply it to the best of my ability, and whatever happens, it happens.
Yeah, it seems like those three species are definitely more challenging than the ones that we have in the Mobile Basin. I'm gonna try. I'm probably gonna do a little road trip come this May, let everything warm up a little bit. But I was kind of doing some pregame scouting when I was up at the Atlanta Fly Fishing Show, and it's definitely different, man. Getting when you got Atlanta up there, a lot of the fisheries, you get a lot more pressure. There's a lot more people beating around in just the water.
Yeah.
It's all really, really different from some of the stuff, like especially if it's a bit of whiplash going from like fishing the Tallapoosa River, for instance, to fishing the Chattahoochee outside of Atlanta. Completely different world.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it is. But that's a lot of fun. I'm really encouraged by those opportunities to just kind of be out there and be lost. I travel a ton for work and doing less of that nowadays. But historically, I've done a ton of travel, and so I'm used to being in new waters. That part is good, but when you're trying to do the slam, it's not only exploratory. You're out there on a mission.
Oh,
So,
yeah.
like I say, I just make the best of those, and or hope for the best rather during those. And yeah, that's I can't give a ton of I can give a ton of advice, but it's not going to be good advice outside of
Yeah.
Alabama.
Well, it's getting to be that time of the year. I'm looking forward to it. I love road trip fishing. I love just hopping in a car and just going to a new county and trying something out. I got to get back on my county slam. I'm hoping to finish that up this year, knock out some of that stuff I got still in Northwest Alabama left to do. And I'd like to try to get on some smallmouth bass up there on the Tennessee River, and then I'm gonna try to go do the Red Eye Grand Slam. And if I got time, I may mess with some of them little brook trout if I'm up that way anyway. But I have a feeling like I need to ignore brook trout, because if I dip my toe into that, I'm probably not gonna get any red eye fishing done this year. But I'm really excited about what the spring holds. Looking forward to it. It's the time of the year where the fishing's great and it's just gonna get better. But Andre, I appreciate you being on the show. Guys who are listening in, definitely check out. If you're not involved with it, consider getting involved with the Mayfly Project. Check out the work that Andre's doing with Skills and Gills. And Andre, I'll talk with you later, brother.
Talk to you later, man. You have fun.
This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Texas Hunter. Texas Hunter Products is celebrating 70 years of engineering the highest quality outdoor products in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality, dependability, and durability. Their premium standards have earned the trust of generations of anglers, hunters, and outdoor enthusiasts across the country. Texas Hunter directional fish feeders feature patented technology and are among the highest rated in the industry. With multiple capacities available and deployment options for shorelines or docks, Texas Hunter has the fish feeder for any lake or pond. You can trust that Texas Hunter products will meet your needs for generations to come. Learn more at texashunter.com. Southeastern Pond Management. Since 1989, Southeastern Pond Management has been a leader in pond and lake management services. If you own a pond or lake anywhere in the Southeast, Southeastern Pond Management can evaluate the health of your pond and then work with you individually to put together the right plan to get what you want out of your body of water. Through electrofishing, liming, fertilizing, and stocking and weed control, Southeastern Pond Management is the one-stop shop to help you produce more healthy trophy fish than ever before. Schedule an obligation-free consultation today. Call 1-888-830-POND or email info@southeastpond.com. Alrighty, guys, welcome back. This time we got a new guest reporting in from a new area. I know we do a lot of stuff on the Coosa and Alabama and the Tennessee and all of the big lakes, and then we've worked in some stuff with Stephen Rockarts talking about the Cahaba River. We've had Matt Lewis on in the past talking about Little River and stuff like that, but there's a big chunk of the state in the Wiregrass region. You get up in southeast Alabama and outside of some of the reservoirs on the Chattahoochee. Nobody talks about it. I'm excited about this guest. He plays in some of the waterways that I've played in. He's kind of familiar with the Sepulga, the Kaneka a little bit, but what he really focuses in on is like the Choctaw Hatchie, the Pea River, all of that. And I'm super excited to have that area on the report, and I'm personally interested in it because it's not really that far from where I'm at down in Baldwin County, and I had a chance to fish it, and it really surprised me how pretty some of them little streams were, and it just wasn't what I pictured, and I can't wait to go back. But he can talk about it better than I can. We're going to talk today with Taylor Hara. Taylor, how you doing today?
Hey, Nick, I'm doing good, man. Thank you so much for having me on. I've been following along with you on Facebook for at least past year or two. And I was really excited when I saw you reached out. It looks like we do a lot of the same type of fishing, fish a lot of the same type of areas. And I see you're big into just hunting in general in the outdoors here in lower Alabama. So I'm happy to get to talk to you today. Yeah, so like you said, I live in Headland, Alabama, which if you're not familiar with that, it's about 10, 15 minutes north of Dothan. Grew up here in Dothan and mostly just did some pond hopping, like across the golf courses, catching largemouth and things like that. A little bit of exposure to saltwater fishing down on the surf, as well as like deep sea fishing through my teen years. And then I stopped fishing for a long period of time when I went to school at Auburn. And then when I was kind of wrapping up my tenure there at Auburn, I actually accidentally stumbled upon red-eye bass, just surprisingly like in a ditch next to Walmart up in Opelika, Alabama. So that kind of got my attention as far as like, hey, we have stuff here in Alabama that nobody else really has. So I got big into the red eye fishing up there, fishing the Tallapoosa and its tributaries. And then recently here, I moved back to the Wiregrass region, and I was very surprised to find out that the Choctahatchee and this area, the state in general, has a lot of waterways that you wouldn't think are down here. They look more like they're up there near the fall line by Opelika. So I'd be happy to talk about that a little bit more with you.
Yeah, I'm excited, and I've been following you on Facebook as well. I've been watching you fish some of the Marys over there, and I've been admiring that German short hair that you got. I got a lab, and unfortunately, Labs being Labs, like, he's a hunting dog. He's not a fishing dog. He tries to retrieve the fish that I catch and throw back in the water, which is kind of problematic when you go to catch the next fish. So, but I've been admiring that. And yeah, talk to me a little bit about some of those areas. Like you're talking about the Choctaw Hatchie. Like, is there a specific part of the Choctaw Hatchie you like? Or I'm really kind of struggling for questions because that area is so different from a lot of the stuff that we talk about week to week with, you know, like where you have lake levels and people talk about the discharge rate at the dam, the flow levels and stuff like that. Like, before we get too deep into it, let's start broad level. Tell me about the Choctaw Hatchie. Like, is that a river where they have hydrograph readings and stuff like that? Like, I know I don't think it's impounded or anything. There's no real reservoirs on it, right? It's all just free flowing.
Yeah. So I'll start a little bit just about the drainage and, you know, what it kind of looks like. And then I'll go into the conditions that I'm looking for and what type of features and things I'm looking for when I'm fishing. Yeah. So like you said, it's undammed. It flows all the way from Barber County, basically right up there near Barber County WMA, all the way down to Destin, Florida, and empties out Choctahatchee Bay into the Gulf of Mexico. So Really cool river. You'll have like sturgeon, striped bass, mullet running up all the way up here near Dothan, all the way down from the bay. So that's a really cool thing. And then we have a species of bass called the Choctaw bass. It hasn't officially been described as its own species yet, but it's like a spotted bass or an Alabama bass, but it's a little bit different, and it's in these coastal rivers. Basically, from here, between like the Apalachicola, Chattahoochee, all the way over to the Mobile Basin. So a lot of those streams over by you, east of the Mobile, are going to have the Choctaw bass too. I mostly fish the upper stretches of the Choctahatchee and the Pea and some of their tributaries. The Choctahatchee has a west and east fork. So they're almost, a lot of people would think, look at it and think, okay, that's a creek, not a river, but technically they call it a river. It's tan and stained water, so it's not black like something you think about like the Suwannee or some of the stuff down in Florida, but it's always got a bit of a brownish orange tinge to it, so it's not as clear as some of the stuff up north, but it's beautiful. It cuts through this like clay type stone. It's hard enough where it doesn't just fall out in the river, and it makes some really cool features where you're fishing down in a big like gully with big bluff banks up on the side of you, 10-15 feet there. And it makes a really cool kind of microclimate. So a lot of the times you'll be down there fishing. We're down here in like South Alabama, right near the Florida line, and you got mountain laurel, you got rhododendron, native azaleas up there on the bank. And then it's overhung by big live oaks and magnolias and Spanish moss hanging over. So it's a really unique experience. If it's still too cold up where you are, I would highly recommend, you know, coming down and checking out the Choctahatchee. It's got a lot to offer, and love fishing it so far. I'm just getting to exploring it, but it's beautiful, it's unique, and I love it. So
yeah, it's the rock or clay formations or whatever you want to call them, like that was a big surprise for me. Like I was trying to find a place, trying to knock a county off the list last year, and just drove over a bridge and was kind of like, man, that seemed like a pretty deep ravine, like that may be something. And I pulled over and I scrambled down to riprap, and it was, yeah, clear flowing water, rocky, and then it felt like it was 15 degrees cooler down in there. I mean, it was like you had all of a sudden just drove 4 hours north, just in that little ravine, you know, like all that cool humid air out in the middle of the hot summer day. And yeah, the Choctaw bass are awesome. Very unique coloration. Like they definitely look different. Some of the ones that I've seen have like that brown tinge to their fins, which is really, it's subtle, but like you definitely notice it if you've been catching, you know, other species of bass. Beautiful fish, and then like, you know, all the other spotted bass, the Kentucky spots or the Alabama bass or wherever you get onto them, like if you're used to catching largemouth and you catch one of them, especially if they got some current, a 2 pound fish, he's got some shoulders on him, you know.
Oh yeah
it's a lot of fun. So tell me what else you got there. Like I know you was mentioning earlier off air that you got some chain pickerel out that way. You was talking about the Choctaw bass. What other species you fishing for there?
Yeah, so in the waters that I'm fishing up in the upper part, I'm fishing a lot of shoals and stuff. So the pickerel tend to be more in the slack water from what I'm seeing, down more in the lower Choctahatchee where the two forks come together. There you'll run into more largemouth mixed in with the Choctaw bass, and then some pickerel and some bowfin. But yeah, I'm fishing more the upper part. So we've got the Choctaw bass, and then all the assortments of brim. We got like shadow bass, red breast, long ear, all those colorful brim. So those are always a fun bycatch. But what I'm usually targeting is going to be the Choctaw bass. I lost one the other day, and I know how the story always goes, but the one that that got away is the biggest. But this thing, it had to have been at least 4 or 5 pounds, I'm telling you. And my dog, kind of like you said, he was going after it, so I was trying to horse it in, and I didn't quite finesse him enough, so he got off. But yeah, the Choctaw bass would get pretty big, pretty comparable to your other spotted bass across the state. So main thing I'm targeting is going to be those bass. And this time of year, My opinion is I believe they're staging up for the spawn, and they're a current loving bass, so they're usually going to be staging up right there in those shoals. Now, how I target those shoals or find them, being new to the area, is I'll get on like Onyx or Google Maps. You'll want to try to find something that has an image where the water is not just blown out the bank. So both of those usually do pretty good. And then I'll just look for like a put in, and then I'll go up or downstream and just look for where the water is disturbed. A lot of the times where they build the bridge down here anyway is going to be close to where those shoals are, I guess, because the water is shallower, so it was easier for them to build it. But I'm looking for that. And right here pre-spawn, they seem to be kind of right outside the heavy current in an eddy or like in a seam. So that's kind of what I'm targeting right now, just throwing in like a Ned rig or a Texas rig, like trick worm or finesse worm. And the fishing has been really good here end of February all the way into March. So as long as you can find a good water level and it's not just blown out, we do have gauges down here that you can check. Right now is really the time to be fishing. I went out the other day and it was pretty much an every cast kind of day, just throwing a Ned rig. And they'll stack up below these shoals if you can find like a deep hole below a shoal. So I was casting into an area about the size of like a dining room table or something, and I caught 10 or 15 in a row. So it's hot right now. If you're able to get down here and do some fishing, again, I would highly recommend it.
It sounds like really good time, and I don't fish them as much as I used to, but man, when I was in college, like the Ned rig was my go-to. Like I had, that was always the first thing I threw. Like that was back when that was really getting popular. Like I found it and jumped mm-hmm. onto it, and Ned rig fishing a smaller body of water like that is right up my alley. And from what I saw of it last year, there's a good chance I may be out about your way this weekend, somewhere up around there, driving through some of that country and checking out some of it. You was talking about like the water levels, the flow levels, and then you mentioned there being some put-ins. You fish up there, like are you usually wade fishing, or are you doing float trips, or are you doing a little bit of both? Like there's not much where you're talking about where it splits. There's not that much powerboat access, is there? Like that's pretty skinny water.
Yeah, good point. So it's skinny water. You'd have a hard time finding an access where you could get a John boat down to the water, maybe like a canoe with a trolling motor. But what I'm usually running is actually a paddleboard or a canoe. What I'll do, I'm skipping all of any slack water. I paddle straight to the shoal at this time of year. And what I do, I'll paddle up there and then I'll just hop out and beach up my canoe or paddleboard and just fish off a little sandbar or like just stand on the shoal and fish there below the, in that current. So how you're going to be accessing it is mainly going to be smaller craft. So think kayak, paddleboard, canoe, or that new boat that you got, that inflatable, I guess you'd call it a raft, that would work as well.
Yeah, I'm itching to try that pack raft out too. I bought it with some of them little waterways in mind that I saw when I was driving through Dothan and all that surrounding area last year. So yeah, that sounds like my cup of tea, man. And I tell you what, especially in my mind, like as it starts to heat up in the summer, like it's beautiful to be out there in the spring when the dogwoods and like you were talking about, like the wild azaleas and the rhododendron and all that. But spring is beautiful. And then summer, man, wade fishing is the way to go. Like I've spent so many days of my life baking on a boat deck out in the full sun. The chance to take a canoe somewhere where you get a little canopy and you get a little bit of shade and get a little cool water flowing over your feet, man, that's wonderful. I'm a big duck hunter. I love in the fall, you know, when it's cold and you duck hunt and everything, but like I always look forward to it when the air gets crisp and the bird starts flying. But like right now is one of my favorite times of the year. It's just gonna get better, and it's really, I enjoyed talking with you about it. But I'm gonna have to hit you up some more in the future. We're not that far away from each other. We'll have to go fish with each other. But You was telling me earlier, and I was kind of looking through it, looking at some of your thumbnails. Tell our listeners, you've got a pretty good little YouTube channel going. Tell them what the name of that channel is.
Yeah, so I've got a YouTube channel, and I show a lot of the stuff that I was just talking about. So you can go on there and you can see what does the Chotahashee actually look like? Does it really look like something that would be further north in Alabama? And then you can also see some of the tactics that I'm talking about. I've got some Ned Rig stuff on there, as well as some tactics for when they start spawning, which I would expect is coming up here right around early mid-April. So I'll throw a spinner bait once they start spawning, something that kind of resembles a brim, just to get them irritated and trigger like a defense for their bed. So yeah, check that out. It's the YouTube is Paddle Alabama. If you search that, a thumbnail should come up of my GSP. His name's Kusa. So you'll see a dog on the thumbnail. Just click that, and you'll see a lot of fish catching. If anybody's in this area or thinking about coming down to fish this area, you could also just contact me on Facebook, Taylor Hara, and just let me know. I'd love to try to build a little bit more of a community around here that does some of this small water fishing. One of the things we kind of struggle with here is a lot of folks use some of these access points or the bridges as like their own public landfill. So I'd love to try to get some folks together that like to fish this area and try to kind of clean that up. And if we could clean that up, it's really pristine. There's not a lot of development or anything along these stretches of river. So yeah, just let me know. I'd love to go fishing with anybody who's down here. And Nick, same to you. If you get down here this weekend, let me know, and we'll hit up some spots.
Absolutely. Well, Taylor, I really enjoyed hearing about the Choctaw Hatchie. Look forward to hearing more about it in the future. Guys, if y'all get a second, go check out his YouTube channel. He's got a pretty dog, and he's got some really pretty fish, and some of them are pretty big. I'm getting a little bit jealous here, so I might have to go check out some of his spots this weekend.
All right. Yes, sir. Thanks for having me, Nick.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. This week's episode has been brought to you by L&M Marine. L&M Marine has something for everyone, from small hunting boats to pontoon boats, to bigger bay boat and offshore hybrids. L&M Marine LLC prides itself on its customer service and knows how important it is to be taken care of and to have someone you can trust. They are locally owned and regularly support the surrounding community. L&M Marine provides superior customer service and has an entire team that consists of professional sales members, finance experts, service technicians, and a knowledgeable parts and accessory staff to fully support you. Go visit their friendly, reliable, and experienced staff today. L&M Marine is located 6 miles north of I-10 at 34600 Highway 59 in Stapleton, Alabama. You can also reach them by phone at 251-937-1380. Killer Dock. Most fishermen clean their fish on something like an unsightly old wooden table or the top of a cooler, somewhere that's not comfortable, not sanitary, and not attractive. Killer Dock makes the greatest fish cleaning stations known to mankind. They are built from marine-grade aluminum and ceramic-coated to protect them from the harsh salt environment. Killer Dock makes tables and canopies at several different sizes, so whatever you need on your dock, deck, or patio, they have a fish cleaning station for you. Check out killerdock.com to see more. Alrighty, guys, we're back, and this time we got a very special guest. We got Will Strickland with Mobile Baykeepers. We're doing a special segment. We are recording live from Live Oak Landing. Will, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Had to deal with the IRS this morning, so, you know, it's always a good start to the day.
Yeah, you got that call, and I just kind of moseyed on over to fish a little bit, trying to be polite. I've had to do that before, and that's no fun at all, especially when you're not making any money.
That's right. I don't know why they're fooling with me, but it's good to be outside today.
Oh, dude, no, you're not kidding. I've been tied up at work. I've been in the office slaving away, and dude, it's beautiful right now. It's like 70 degrees at 10 o'clock in the afternoon, and not a cloud in the sky, and fish are hitting top water, so you can't ask for more than that.
That's a good day for sure.
Well, tell me, it's been a while since we talked. We talked at the close of duck season, and winter's gone. Spring is most definitely here. I'm looking at it, all the cypress trees, like the delta's greening up. We got the spring flood still in effect, but what have y'all been up to? What's it looking like on the Delta from the baykeeper's point of view?
Yeah, well, it's the change of seasons brings changes in our work as well. We start to be more in the field, doing a lot more water quality monitoring. But before I move on to that, my dog Lily that I introduced last time, she was mad at me because last time I got on here and told on her for not getting after that duck that day. So I did want to give her a Lily report. She went on a quail hunt and flushed four birds and retrieved every one of them, and you know, just proud and happy as could be. So I just wanted everybody to know, and for Lily to know, if you're listening, that you've done a good job, girl. So
that's awesome. She just didn't care for cold water. She didn't care for long walks in the mud and cold water, apparently.
We're going to get her going next season, but she needed them. And quail are a little smaller. It's a little bit less scary. But yeah, I mean, when you start getting into quail season, or you start getting brim on the bed here with the dogwoods blooming and all that, for us at Baykeeper, it indicates there's going to be some more rain, and there's going to be more people out in the water. And so we do more testing, in particular around bacteria. We start our weekly swim testing here in a couple weeks. And so every week we'll be testing the sites along Mobile Bay and surrounding coastal waters to let folks know what the bacteria levels are. And for those of you that don't know, and we get questions about this a lot, when it rains, that's when we see these sewage spills, these elevated levels of bacteria. And so if you go on our website and view our swim guide, you'll see the latest report actually shows pretty good levels of bacteria. Well, that's because those samples were taken before the latest rains and flooding and all those sorts of things. And so general rule of thumb, and you can view the legacy of wherever you're at, of where there's holes in the infrastructure. If it rains, if the water's high, there's going to be sewage in the water. There's going to be bacteria in the water. And so we're putting that out directly to let folks know where it's safe to swim, but it relates to fishing as well.
Yeah, definitely. I know me and a buddy, we've been doing the Suncatch Slam this year with the Gulf Coast Council for the FFI. And a lot of them little sandy bottom creeks on the eastern shore and in Mobile, they got all kind of cool sunfish. I think so far between the two of us, we've caught red-eared sunfish, green sunfish, long-eared sunfish, dollar sunfish, crappie, you know, bluegills. I'm missing a few warmouth, so there's lots of really good fishing. You got some pretty decent bass up in them little, you know, urban, suburban creeks, and I love playing in them, but yeah, you don't want to be, like right now I'm sitting here looking, I got my shorts and my flip-flops on, and I got a kind of an open wound from a bug bite I was scratching. I got in a fire ant bed. You don't want to be wading around in a, it may look like a clean creek, but I don't want to be in Three Mile Creek after it rains.
That's right, and so for those of you listening, clear does not necessarily mean clean, and unclear doesn't necessarily mean unclean either, but we'll get to that in a minute. So, yeah, if you're wade fishing and you don't want to be exposed to high levels of bacteria, it'll make you sick. You certainly need to know that if you're wading. But also, if you're just catching fish to eat, you know, y'all are doing the slam. That's, you know, it's a sportsman thing. You're probably mostly doing catch and release. But all those fish you named are panfish, and they eat good. And so knowing if there's been a big sewage spill or high bacteria levels there where you're fishing, that's going to be important for you to have that knowledge. You don't want to eat fish that are caught out of sewage. But then beyond that, we want to catch more fish, right? That's something that all of us anglers are always advocating for, habitat and things that are going to improve our fishing experience. And so sewage is one of the many inputs of nutrients that enters into our waterways, whether it be from fertilizer runoff, or we're sitting out here at Live Oak Land and there's ducks all around and they're pooping in this pond, adding nutrients to it.
Yeah.
That creates these algae blooms, and these algae blooms, they're not necessarily bad until they become a harmful algae bloom, and that sucks oxygen out of the water, causes fish kills, and causes a loss of habitat. Those subaquatic vegetation can't survive without oxygen, and that algae will eat up that oxygen and make it where they can't survive. So that's going to decrease our fish population. So if you didn't think it already, sewage spills are bad, but knowing where they are and then advocating for your local utility to fix those issues is important.
And remind our listeners real quick, if you don't mind, Will, what's the way to get access to those reports that y'all have on your website?
Yeah, so if you want to just view our weekly swim guide, it's going to be mobilebaykeeper.org/swim-guide. Of course, you can access it through the homepage as well, but it's mobilebaykeeper.org/swim-guide. But if you want to view the reports, if you just kind of want to know, how's water quality in my area, so that when it rains, you don't necessarily have to look it up again, you can go to mobilebaykeeper.org/swim report. And what we have there is each year we publish a report to say, how was water quality in the area? And I've got it here in front of me, so I'll call out a couple things. Fly Creek over in Baldwin County.
I've fished it many times.
It's had a bad year.
Uh-oh.
About 75% of the time we've tested it, it's had levels of bacteria that are above the limit that is safe to swim in. And therefore, in my opinion, unsafe to eat that fish, too.
Probably wouldn't want to paddle out of it either, or catch fish and then be tying a knot and have your leader in your mouth while you were tying.
It just takes a little bit of that bacteria to make you sick. And so that's one area. But then, you know, here in Mobile Bay at Live Oak, we've had 100% clean. There has not been any issues reported that year in this past year. Then you have other ones like the Dog River Park.
Yeah.
Over in Mobile County. And it's about 50-50. So, again, I would likely think that that's when it rains nearby. There's some infrastructure that's going to leak into your waterways. So there's some areas that are impaired regardless if it rains or not. Fly Creek has been one of those over the last year. Some areas where even when it rains, there's not going to be an overflow. And then, of course, some areas where when it rains, you're going to have issues. And so knowing that generally about the places that you frequent is helpful as well. But we produce that guide weekly in the summer for those of you that want to check it out. We mentioned this spring coming in and higher water levels right now causing more sewage spills. And so, again, just to remind people, when it rains, that's the time when you need to be concerned and take a look at what's going on. And that's not just related to sewage.
For sure. Well, speaking of the water, the age-old question here on the Mobile Delta is, how high is the water, Mama?
The Delta, for those of you that don't know, it's supposed to flood. It's supposed to flood and dry and leave nutrients and sediment out. I mean, that's how this thing was created and why we have such biodiversity here. So right now, water's high, and it's rising as well. Those water levels are important for us checking out all sorts of pollution issues. But last weekend, it was about 7 feet, and today it's at 8.85, and it's rising. We expected it to crest at about 9 feet this weekend, meaning that if you're out there fishing, it's going to be moving quick, and it's going to be muddy. And we can talk more about that. I don't think we'll have time today to get into all why it's muddy. But it's going to be high water, and it's going to be moving quickly if you're out there fishing. Now, I mentioned that this reading comes from Plant Berry, which is up in the Delta. And those of you that have followed Baykeeper at all know that we're opposing plans to keep a big lagoon of coal ash up there filled with all sorts of heavy metals and toxics, which we'll get to in a minute. But it's about 22 million tons of this stuff. There are plans to just leave it right there, cap it in place, put a liner on top of it. We believe that that's illegal according to the law of it not sitting in groundwater. If you ever spent any time in the Delta, good luck not having anything get wet. And so that's the plans, but currently it is sitting in groundwater. And so we know that there's arsenic leaking from that pond into the Mobile River. I mentioned last podcast, Mobile River has a fish consumption advisory. It says do not eat any fish on it, and that's mostly due to mercury. But I can tell you, if you're fishing around Plant Berry, there's some good spots right there. There's a little there's a little warm water canal coming out of there.
In the wintertime, everybody wants to pile up on the hot ditch.
Yeah. That's right. So the hot ditch is a great place to catch fish, but not a great place to eat fish. And so if you're up there and thinking about eating a catfish from down on the bottom, just remember that there's arsenic coming out of the groundwater into the river right there, and those fish are directly exposed to it.
Well, I know we've talked in the past, would you, about mercury. You were actually the person who got me to really look into the mercury levels in the water up here. And ever since then, to be honest, I quit running trot lines. You know, I just figured for me and my little family, I'm starting, it's not worth the risk. And I've talked with Justin about, is it PCBs, I think?
PCBs, yeah. Their way.
Yeah, glad.
And, of course, it comes downstream to us.
Everything comes down this way. So, but something that we haven't talked a lot about, I mean, I know just with my backwoods education, I know that arsenic is bad. But tell me more about how arsenic gets into water and what the health risks are if you're exposed to arsenic. That's something I'm not familiar with.
Definitely. Well, arsenic, you know, I'm grateful for some pop culture references to arsenic, because most of the time when folks think about arsenic, they're thinking about rat poison, right?
Right.
And so, you know, people think of it as toxic. Unlike mercury, which, as we talked about last time, is largely atmospheric, its inputs coming from other places or even part of our geology, arsenic is a result of industrial processes that we have here in state. you don't see as many advisories on those because mercury kind of is the star of the show when it comes to these advisories, but there's plenty of inputs of arsenic into our waterways, and it's a heavy metal that causes all sorts of chronic issues. It can cause cancer, as many things can, and skin lesions is the first couple things that you want to think of when you think of arsenic. But it's another one of those things that like mercury and lead, they attack it over time, causes your nervous system, your brain to function less. It can, if in really high quantities, it can affect your liver, your lungs, and of course, it's particularly dangerous for pregnant mothers and their children, whether it be in a pregnant mother that has a child with her or children in general. The bigger you are, the more arsenic you can take in your system, like any of these toxics.
Does it kind of bioaccumulate? I'm guessing then from what you're saying, the same way that mercury does, where it's a matter of, you know, how big the fish is and how long it's been eating other fish and accumulating more and more of it?
Yeah, so bioaccumulation and biomagnification, those are our two words. So you want to eat small fish because the more times that fish has to eat things that have these heavy metals, arsenic, mercury, or even PCBs, the more the fish is going to have in them. And then accumulation is the least predatory fish are going to have less in them as well. Look at all those turtles.
William, I know y'all have been working pretty hard on behalf of everybody that uses the waterways. You've been partnering with other water keepers, trying to get the Shore Act passed to kind of help combat some of these issues that anglers and swimmers and other citizens are facing in the waterways. What's the status report on the Shore Act this year?
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, this will be my last bit of concerning news, and then maybe we'll talk about catching some fish. Yeah, we've been up there in Montgomery weekly trying to push this bill, and every legislator we talk to says, man, this is a great piece of legislation, and it's important that we let public know the public information. So that's actually really good. The negative there is that there are these folks running around. They seem to know what they're doing, and I've learned those people are called lobbyists, and they get paid to go up there and push whoever they're paying them interest. And so my understanding right now is the Shore Act is caught up as some of the industrial lobbyists are concerned that it may look industry look bad. I'm unsure of the details of that, as I've not been able to communicate with them directly. They don't have to do that, I guess. They talk to the legislators. So despite the legislators, the ones that are making the laws and get a vote that we put in office, they support the bill, but they're concerned that it's not going to be able to make it through the process without these lobby groups being able to turn a lot of the legislatures against it. So we've not even been able to get it through committee yet. So that means you anglers that care about this need to let your voice be heard. Let people know that you matter as much as whatever industry doesn't want to look like they're the reason we have fish consumption advisories. And again, this bill doesn't address pollution. It doesn't require industry to do anything. All it's going to do is let this information be known more at boat ramps and when you buy your fishing license. So you can visit AL Shore Act, ALSHORACT.com, and all the information of how to let your voice be heard will be available there. And to wrap all these things up, you know, I've brought several concerns to the group today, but I just want to remind everybody that this is our job, is to point out the issues that folks should know about. I plan on getting out there here soon in the spring. My boat's almost ready. It's been in the shop, and so I'm excited to get it back, and I'm going to head down to the marsh and see if I can't catch a redfish, and then head up here in the river and see what damage we can do. Get the kids with a bobber and a worm and, you know, get on these brim beds that'll be hitting soon. And so I'm going to be out there despite these concerning things, and I'm probably going to be eating some of these fish as well. Of course, I will check my advisories, and I'll check to see where there's high bacteria. But I'm going to be out there like you guys catching fish and then trying to eat some of them.
Yeah, definitely. I'm in the same boat. I don't run trot lines anymore, but I do still like to get out there and Me and the missus was just talking about it. It's been a while since we've had a crappie fry, so we might have to rectify
yeah,
that
here. Make sure
shortly.
You give me a call when that happens now.
For sure. No, from what I've heard, old Dip McMillan, he's been hammering them up shallow up in the Cypress Knees, and I got a few places in mind where this weekend I'm hoping we can get up out the current and maybe get into a little clearer water, some of the little tributary creeks that don't have quite as much sediment load, and hit them. And then I got to get, at some point, I got to find me a white crappie. So if you find any white crappie, we got a handshake agreement. You report to me first.
I'll let you know. But as you know, Dip's the man. You said he's been hammering them lately. I don't know when he doesn't hammer them. So
I would love to fish like Dip, because Dip's bad days are better than my good days.
Yeah, I was going to say. I'm not surprised that he's been catching them.
Well, have you made it down lately? I know I sent you some pictures. Have you been up fishing in Rabbit Creek yet?
I've not been, but this paddle board you just let me borrow right here, that's where we're headed. We're going to go there, and we might also hit the marsh down in Grand Bay in it. But, yeah, Rabbit Creek's going to be the first stop, and hopefully there's some green trout or something in there that I can get on this paddle board.
Yeah, I know, too. I know you've talked about hitting Perdido in the past, and that's something I've been kind of – checking out, dipping my toes in more, literally going up there on some of them sandbars. But when I was at that banquet this weekend, I met a guy, Ronnie Lipham Jr. Actually, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he grew up fishing out there, and he's actually going to be putting on for any of the locals here in Baldwin, Mobile County. He's looking at planning a few fishing seminars out there on that river once turkey season wraps up. He's a big turkey hunter, so he's not doing nothing until turkey season wraps up. But He'll be showing people how to get out there and catch. From what he was saying, you got a good bass population. I think you got largemouth and spotted bass up in there. You got long-eared sunfish, bluegill, red ears, like all the normal sunfish. But then I was pleased to find out that he was also not above chasing. They got some big black-tailed shiners up in there that are pretty fun to catch in their own right on a light fly rod, but they also make real good bass bait once you dump them off in them deep holes. And I imagine he said there's some flatheads up in there, too, in the river bends, and I'd like to go after them.
That is a magical river. It's like a combination of deep south bass and brim and catfish fishing, but it feels almost like you're on a trout stream out west. It's sandy, gravelly bottom, clear waters, and you can wade fish it with a fly rod just like you're fishing for trout out west.
Absolutely. Well, Will, it's always a pleasure having you on. Guys, if y'all are listening in, definitely educate yourself on the fish consumption advisories, the bacteria levels in the local water, and then basically, you know, think like Will said, we would just ask that y'all go ahead and you know, share what you learn about the Shore Act, contact people that you can contact. This is going to be a good piece of legislature if we can get it pushed on through. So, Will, until next time, good luck fishing, brother.
Thanks for having me. You too.
This week's episode has been brought to you by Fish Bites. Whether you're hitting the sand with set rigs, using traditional scent strips for pompano, or fishing the flats and marshes for speckled trout, redfish, and flounder, Fish Bites has something for you. Family-owned and operated in St. Augustine, Florida, they pride themselves on making reliably consistent fishing products for anglers of all ages all around the world. Fish Bites baits and lures are made with pride in the Sunshine State here in USA. Check out the full line of scented saltwater and freshwater baits at fishbites.com. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Get you that free AFCO Sun Protection Mask promo code and get added to our email list so that we can send you the new show each week. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks, manufacture a variety of metal roofing systems to meet your needs. Whether you're putting a new roof on your home or sheeting a commercial building, they have you covered. Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks, your metal roofing headquarters. And brought to you by Mallard Bay. Book your next guided hunting or fishing trip with thoroughly vetted guides or charters. Plan trips, buy gear, go experience. MallardBay.com. Also by Hilton's Real-Time Navigator, bringing you the highest quality online satellite fishing charts since 2004. Your source for sea temps, allometry, currents, and water color at HiltonsOffshore.com.